Let's read again in John chapter 5. John chapter 5 and verse 44. How can you believe which receive honor one of another and seek not the honor that comes from God only? Charles Spurgeon, the Baptist preacher, was a man who was involved in many controversies, many theological disputes and debates. And he was frequently lampooned, caricatured, and critiqued in the national media of the day. And at one point, somebody asked him in the middle of one of these controversies, what do you want your epitaph to be? What do you want written on your tombstone? And he said this, four words, saved from human opinion. Saved from human opinion. Spurgeon was really trying to emphasize here the importance of ignoring what people are saying and focusing only on what God is saying. And that's the emphasis of Jesus here in John chapter 5, verse 44. And really what he's calling the Jews there to do and us through this verse is to be saved from human opinion. In this passage, Jesus is highlighting two obstacles to faith, two hindrances on the way to heaven, two difficulties that people run into in their spiritual lives. And the first one is this problem of human opinion. And the second one is an Old Testament problem. We'll look at both of these problems tonight. But why does Jesus speak about these problems here? Well, it's because in the verses leading up to this passage, he's been emphasizing how much evidence there is for faith. He's been showing his hearers how much help they have been given to believe. If you back through the previous verses, you'll see he refers, first of all, to John the Baptist and how he was a burning and a shining light. He was a glorious witness to the truth. And then he references his own miracles, the amazing wonders he did, the healings, the interventions in the course of nature. Great supernatural wonders, again, to assist faith. And then the last time we looked at this passage, we have the help of the scriptures. So you've got the witness of John the Baptist, the witness of the miracles, and the witness of the Bible. And Jesus is saying, what a package has been put together here for you. And yet, where's the faith? And so he begins to analyze, why is it, given there's so much witness, so much evidence, so much help, why is it that people do not believe? And we looked at the first reason he gave, the last time we looked at this passage, is the problem of the human will. The problem of the human will. You see that in verse 40. And you will not come to me that you might have life. And then there's this human opinion problem highlighted in verses 41 to 44. And then there's this Old Testament problem that we'll look at more briefly in verses 45 to 47. So we're going to look at two of these problems tonight, a human opinion problem and an Old Testament problem. two obstacles that were hindering people then and that are still hindering people like you and I today. Let's look then, first of all, and mainly at this human opinion problem. He says in verse 41, I receive not honor from men. If we're to paraphrase this, it would sound like this. I do not make human opinion my priority. Now, Jesus did receive honor from men. People did give him honor. They did give him glory. They did give him praise in a limited way, a limited number of people, but he did. So what this does not mean is it doesn't mean I've never been praised and I've never been honored and I've never been worshipped. No, what he's saying is this isn't what determines my life. I'm not chasing after human acceptance, human approval, or human applause. That's not my priority. That's not my number one. That's not the driving motivation of my life. This isn't what gets me up in the morning. This isn't what makes me do what I do. This isn't what gives me satisfaction when I lay my head in the pillow at night. And the reverse is true. It's not stated, but it's implied. And that is, I live for divine acceptance, divine approval, and divine applause. It's what God thinks about me that matters most to me. That's everything to me. That's God's opinion that motivates me to get up in the morning, that makes me do what I do, and that gives me satisfaction when I lay my head on my pillow at night. I receive not honor from men. I do receive honor, and I do pursue honor, and I do chase after honor from God. But then notice, he says in verse 44, we're going to come back to verses 42 and 43 because verses 42 and 43 really trace the problem to its root. But if we skip from 41 to 44, we see a contrast. So put brackets, parentheses, around 42 and 43, and jump from 41 to 44. I receive not honor from men, 41. How can you believe which receive honor one of another? He's contrasting himself with his hearers. He's saying, I don't chase after human opinion, human approval, human acceptance, but you do. You do. You chase after this continually. This is your primary motivation. This is what drives you daily in your duties. You live for human acceptance, human approval, and human applause. You do not live for divine approval, acceptance, and applause, therefore. How can you believe? So you see, he's analyzing. Here's this group of people that have all these helps to believe and they don't believe. Why do they not believe? How do they not believe? And here he says is the reason. It's because you receive honor one of another and seek not the honor that comes from God only. You're not chasing after divine approval. You're not making God's opinion number one in your life. And he's asking this question. When that is true of you, if God's opinion is not number one, if human opinion is number one, how can you believe? He's saying that they can't go together. Making human approval, human acceptance, and human applause number one means you cannot believe. You're running into a door there. You're running into a wall. You're running into an immovable object. Why is this such a problem, though? Why is making what people think about you such a priority, such a problem? Well, there are some obvious reasons. Human opinion is so varied. Whose opinion are you going to live for and by? You might spend a day pleasing this person, and, well, if you do that, then this person expresses disapproval. So you please them the next day, and then you'll find someone else who'll critique you and condemn you. You can find as many human opinions as there are human beings in the world. How are you ever going to succeed in pleasing human opinion when it's so varied? Also because it's so changeable. So you please somebody one day, a husband, a wife, a friend, a brother, a sister, a neighbor, a colleague. You please them one day, and you do the same thing the next day, and they critique you for it, and they condemn you for it. Because their opinion is changing, their views are changing all the time. We're all in this sea of change. Also because human opinion is so unreliable, it's so wrong. You live to please other people who are often, if not usually, wrong. What have you got? Also, human opinion is usually very selfish. It's very self-centered. You ask somebody, well, what do you think I should do? What's motivating their answer to you? Is it entirely your own good? Your own benefit? No, it's not. Most often, very often at least, the person answering that question, what should you do, is thinking, first of all, how will this impact me? How will this affect me? Will this be for my good? Or my bad? Will I gain or will I lose? And then based on that, they give their opinion. And so the opinion is not based upon seeking your good, but upon seeking their good. It's selfish. You see how living your life by what others think is such a problem? When what others think is so varied, so changeable, so unreliable, so wrong, so selfish. That's no way to live, is it? Many people try it and just end up in such a mess, don't they? Don't you? Don't I at times? Jesus here speaks of those who live to receive honor one from another, to be approved, to be accepted, to be welcomed, to get pats on the back, to be told how good they are. And does that not characterize you at times? So yes, there are these problems associated with living for human opinion. But Jesus goes deeper. Jesus goes deeper. And he says, the reason this is so serious, it's not just because human opinion is so varied, so changeable, so unreliable, so wrong, so selfish, but because living to please others is ultimately about self-love. It's ultimately about self-love. The person that is living to please other people is living in a way that's all about love for self. How can you say that? Here's a person, and they're chasing their tail all day. They're running around left, right, and center, going round in circles, trying to please him, her, husband, wife, family, friends, neighbors, church, elders, minister, all these people. I mean, that's a person that's living for others. No, not necessarily. Because so often that's motivated by, what praise will I get? How much will people lift me up and speak well of me, or not condemn me and criticize me? And this is what Jesus is speaking about here in this parenthesis, in these brackets, as it were, verse 42. He says, I know you, that you have not the love of God in you. See what he's saying? Here's this person running around, doing all these things to please all these people. And he's saying that the root cause of this is that the love of God is not in you. Instead of living for God, you're living for yourself. You're doing things, you're saying things, you're not doing things, and you're not saying things with this sole question: will it make my life more comfortable? Will it make my life easier? Will it stop this person critiquing me? Will it make this person praise me? Instead of living for God's praise and to avoid God's condemnation, instead of living out of love for God, they're living out of love for self. It's penetrating analysis, isn't it? It's painful analysis. It's searching analysis. It's true analysis. You do not have the love of God in you. Here's people he defines as living to receive honor from others. Because of that, he says, you cannot believe. It's amazing, isn't it? It's like, here's this person, and there are two columns in their life. Two columns in their life. And in the one column is faith. Here's faith rising, growing, filling up day by day, day by day. Faith is growing. And then there's another column here, which is human approval, human acceptance, human applause. And it too can go up. I'm living for this alone. And it too can go down. It's not affecting me at all. And what Jesus is saying is, when human opinion and human approval and human applause is getting bigger and bigger in your life, do you know what's happening to faith? It's going down. And the more faith there is in life, the more living for God, the more living and looking to God, the less human opinion and human approval and human applause comes into the equation. And that's what's happening in all our lives, all the time. It's this. Human approval up, faith down. Human approval down, faith up. And on it goes. Where are you? That's what Jesus is saying. How can you believe when you receive honor one of another? They can't be both up there, he's saying. One is up and one is down. Now, this could be one person in your life, maybe a husband or a wife. Could be your children. Could be your parents. Could be a friend. Could be colleagues that you work beside, neighbors. It might just be the perception of majority public opinion. It could be a church even. It could even be a dead person, believe it or not. We're so perverse. Oh, how can I do that? My grandmother or my grandfather would have disapproved. And what's dictating the life is not God's opinion, but even a deceased person's opinion. Now, I bring it down into the concrete of everyday life. So live it out. So you're deciding. You're making many decisions every day about many different matters. What to wear. What to say. Whether to obey the commandments of God or the commandments of men. Where you'll go to church. What you'll watch with your friends or listen to with your friends. where you'll educate your children or how you'll educate your children, who you'll marry. Where you'll live, what job you will do. Multiple decisions. And this comes into it all the time. Human opinion or faith in God? Living out of love for God or living out of love to self? Make no mistake, these are two very distinct ways to live. And God says you can't live both ways at the one time. He says impossible. Jesus says it here. How can you believe which receive honor one of another? You cannot believe, in other words, if you receive honor one of another. And seek not the honor that comes from God only. And what he's saying there is, the person that's living for God's opinion only can have a full column and will have a full column of faith as well. J.C. Ryle said this, as long as there is anything a man is secretly loving more than God, there will be no true faith. As long as there's anything a man is secretly loving more than God, there will be no true faith. Loving, for example, a friend's acceptance and approval. Loving it so much you'll do anything to avoid offending and hurting. You'll do anything to make them like you and love you and involve you and include you and do nothing that would make them exclude you or look down on you. You know, Spurgeon said he was saved from human opinion. It's a deliverance. It's a salvation. It's part of God's great plan of salvation, not just to deliver us from sin and hell and judgment, but to deliver us from human opinion. And to live in that way is true liberty. It's true freedom. I wonder, though, will it be written over your gravestone? Will your epitaph be damned by human opinion? Condemned to hell because you made your life about what others will think and say about you. What an epitaph. What a summary of a life. If that's the way you're living, then Jesus says of you, I know you, you have not the love of God in you. You love that friend more than you love me. You love that husband more than you love me. You love that wife more than you love me. You love these children more than you love me. You love that neighbor more than you love me. You love that job more than you love me. Ask yourself, where in my life is this true? And deal with it. Crush it. Bring these verses as a powerful wrecking ball to this human opinion that is determining and dictating your life. And ultimately, maybe damning it. How will a friend's opinion, how much will it mean to you? What will you think of it in eternity? And Jesus gives some evidence of this here. He says, for example, in verse 43, he's gone to the root. He's saying, verse 42, I know you, that you have not the love of God in you. I am come in my Father's name, and you receive me not. If another shall come in his own name, him you will receive. And he's saying, here's an evidence of what I'm talking about. Here's an example. So here I am. I come, as he says here, in my Father's name. I didn't come in my own glory, with my own credentials, with pomp and circumstance and with degrees. No, I came with my Father's name. I came with my Father's warrant. I came with my Father's witness. I'm relying on him as my credential, as my degree. I'm looking to him. And what happened? I came in my Father's name, and you received me not. You rejected me. You looked at this and you thought, well, who's he? Joseph's son, the carpenter's son from Nazareth? He's unlearned, and look at the people around him. There's nothing of, I can get no reflected glory from being around him. I'm not going to receive him. I'm not going to associate with him. What would people say? What would people think about me? This would destroy my reputation. And in contrast, he says, if another shall come in his own name, this is someone who comes with a huge mountain of credentials and supporting evidence and witness. Here comes somebody who's really well thought of, who's accomplished much, who's got a big name and fame. Here's somebody who comes and, well, what happens here? Him you will receive. Oh, man, if we are known as his followers, then what will people think? Oh, people will think we're really something. That we are part of this successful person's life and ministry and mission. If you want to maybe put it plainly, it's I've come from heaven and that's not good enough. He comes from Harvard and you welcome him with open arms. Here comes a humble Messiah and you reject him. Here comes a proud man and you receive him. Here comes a Messiah that is demanding. Here comes a leader that says, I'll do this for you. I'll do the next thing for you. Like all the politicians, they make all the promises and make no demands. So who do they choose? Well, this one, of course. This popular man with these popular promises and this popular movement. Jesus is saying, this is just one little example of what I'm talking about. You're making decisions. You're determining your life and your eternity based upon what others will think. Based upon not loving God, but loving yourself, your comfort, your fame, your associations with others that will reflect well upon you. That's a human opinion problem, isn't it? And it affects us all. It affects us all. We talk about peer pressure, but that's not just for teens. That's for 20s and 30s and 40s and 50s and 60s and 70s and 80s too. It goes with us to the very end. It's a battle we'll fight all our days. This human opinion problem can keep from faith and keep your faith from growing. It can stunt faith as well as stop faith. Many are prevented from saving faith because of one person in their life or one group of people in their lives that they know will cast them out or look down on them if they believe. And then there are others who do believe, who come to faith in Christ, but they never grow, they never develop, they never seem to really sacrifice or serve much for the kingdom because they don't want to be thought of as a fanatic. They don't want to be an extremist. They don't witness because, well, what would he say? They don't speak to their neighbor about the gospel because, well, what would they think? They're confronted with choices about talking with people about the gospel and well, if I say this complete and total stranger who I've never met and probably will never meet again will think ill of me. It's insanity, isn't it? Yeah, that's who we are. affects us whether we're in college, in work, in neighborhoods, in churches. Affects ministers. Affects ministers' choice of texts and sermons and what they'll say in them. It's impossible to prepare a sermon without thinking, without the thought coming into the mind, but what will he think? And what will she think? And what will they think? You can't stop these thoughts coming into your mind, but you mustn't let them stay there. Insofar as a minister, a pastor, a preacher of the gospel lets these thoughts dominate and determine his choice of text or words in a sermon, then Jesus' words are true. You do not believe. You do not believe. It's the same things that affect elders when it comes to matters of church discipline. Well, if we do this, then so-and-so will think that, and so-and-so will do this. Well, again, Jesus comes to us with this question. How can you believe if you make human opinion your ultimate concern? It's a lack of faith. It's unbelief. It's skepticism. It's horrible and horrific doubt. So we have a human opinion problem. Still. But notice just very briefly an Old Testament problem. It goes on in verse 45. Do not think that I will accuse you to the Father. Now, he's not saying here, I am not going to be your accuser. You have to watch these statements in John. What he's saying is, do not think that I alone will accuse you to the Father. So he's saying, I will accuse you to the Father. But I won't be the only one. When you come to the judgment seat, you're going to see me there. And I'm going to bear witness against you. We're told that many times in the Bible. But I'm not going to be the only one you see at the judgment seat. Who else is going to be there? Well, he says, there is one that accuses you, meaning another one that accuses you, even Moses, in whom you trust. So he's saying to these Jews, you talk a lot about Moses. You're great Moses scholars. You are Moses' party. You are those who promote Moses and talk about Moses and preach Moses and expound Moses. And when you get up to the judgment seat, oh, lo and behold, who's going to be there? Moses is going to be there. And I know you're expecting that when you get there, Moses is going to put his arm around you and say, oh, well done. Come on in. You did a great job. He's going to accept you. And Jesus says, no. He's going to accuse you, the very one that you talk a lot about and that you seem to spend your life thinking about, that very one is going to be there at the judgment seat, not with open arms, but with pointing fingers. He's going to accuse you. He's going to convict you, and he's going to condemn you. For, he says, verse 46, had you believed Moses, you would have believed me, for he wrote of me. He's saying again, this doesn't work. Just as human opinion cannot work together with faith, so he's saying the study of Moses, the true study of Moses, cannot work together with rejection of me and unbelief. Because he says here, Moses, in whom you trust, that same Moses wrote of me. He wrote of me. And we could spend hours and hours and hours pointing to multiple passages in which Moses wrote of Jesus from Genesis 3:15 onwards. Many prophecies, many pictures, many ceremonies, many sacrifices, many explicit references, many pictures and types throughout Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy. Moses wrote of Jesus continually. That's what Jesus is saying here. In other words, if all you had was Genesis to Deuteronomy, could you be saved? If that's all you had, Genesis to Deuteronomy, could you be saved? And Jesus is saying, of course, of course. Because what Moses wrote about in these books was me. That's what Moses was all about. Me. Moses' witness, he's saying, was clear, it was repeated, it was direct, it was unmistakable. He wrote of me. Therefore, if you really believed Moses, you would believe me. How did they go so wrong? Well, maybe the best way to illustrate it is something like this. You know digital pictures? If you're to take a magnifying glass or blow up a digital picture on your computer screen, ultimately, you would see hundreds and hundreds of little dots, pixels, that these pictures are made up of. And what the Jews did was study the pixels. They knew each pixel minutely. They'd counted the number of letters on each line, in each chapter. They'd all these wonderful mathematical formulas for finding mysterious messages in the numerology of Moses' writings. As Jesus said here, you search the scriptures. They really did. They were amazing researchers. But they didn't see the big picture. They knew all the pixels, but they didn't see the picture. They zoomed in so much, but they didn't see what all the pixels were pointing to. They couldn't see the picture for the pixels. They knew the minutiae, but they didn't know the Messiah. He wrote of me, if you believe not his writings, how shall you believe my words? He's saying, you reject Moses' testimony of me. So what hope do you have of accepting my testimony of me? A message is still applicable today because many people are saying today, we can reject Moses' teachings. We can reject a literal six-day creation of everything out of nothing. We can reject a historical Adam. We can reject a universal flood. We can reject the history of Exodus because, well, archaeology is showing it's all wrong. All these theories, all these ideas. And I say, well, but we've still got the gospel. And Jesus is saying, no, you don't. No, you don't. You've lost it all. If you believe not his writings, how shall you believe my words? Young people, you're going to go to college. You might even go to Christian colleges in which they're going to tell you things like this. That all these things are negotiable. None of these things are certain. And none of these things are important. The plain biblical teaching about creation and about Adam and about marriage and about Israelite history, all these things, well, you know, all these things are a bit vague and uncertain. But we can still believe Jesus. No, you can't. No, you can't. This also is a modern Old Testament problem, isn't it? And the end result is the same. You ultimately lose the gospel and you ultimately lose Jesus. He wrote of me, said Moses. 312 Old Testament passages directly quoted in the New Testament. 532 at least, maybe up to 2,000 alluded to in the New Testament. He wrote of me. There's enough, more than enough, even in Moses' writings, for you to believe the gospel. Yes, there are problems. Yes, there are obstacles. Yes, there are hindrances to face, such as the problem of human opinion, such as the problem here of missing the message of the Old Testament. But all of them are overcomable. Go to God with these problems, with these obstacles. If they're yours, go to him and say, Lord, I must be honest. Human opinion is driving me. Human opinion, what my friends say to me and about me, that does change the way I even dress. It changes the way I speak. It changes how I live, where I go. I must be honest that when they criticize me, it makes me, you know, veer this way. And when I know that they'll approve of me, then I go that way. And then I read your word and it says, you can't believe if you're living like that. The more you live like that, the less you're living by faith. The more you're living out of love for self, the less you're living for God. Take it to him and say, I confess it. Forgive me for it. Deliver me and save me from human opinion. And bring the Old Testament to Jesus and say to him, show me yourself. Give me confidence in this book from start to finish and every single word. Help me to find you in it and build up this faith. And it's linked, isn't it? The more we have of faith in the scriptures, the less we'll be influenced by human opinion. You solve one problem, you solve the other. You solve the problem of human opinion, the more faith you will have in the scriptures. It's all linked together here by Jesus. Both problems are related, and so are the solutions. Bring these problems to God and find your solutions there as well. Amen. Let's pray.